This program is brought to you by the Genesis Communications Network, a world leader in talk radio since 1998. Visit GCNlive.com today.
Welcome back to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio. And now, here's Gene Steinberg.
Chris O'Brien, ladies and gentlemen, has been possessed by something weird, something frightening.
No, that was my Frank Darabont Walking Dead zombie imitation.
And why are we so hung up on zombies these days? I never understood that. You know, I come out of the Frankenstein Dracula tradition, but the zombies never did it for me.
Yeah, and it's different kinds of zombies now. You have your George Romero kind of, you know, plodding along zombies, and then you have your World War Z impossibly quick zombies. So we're kind of branching out. So it kind of reminds me of heavy metal. There used to be like heavy metal, and now there's like 30 different subcategories. So I kind of envision the same thing happening to the zombie genre movie.
You know what's interesting about zombies, since you guys are talking about I want to talk about zombies for 1 minute. I never thought zombies were too good, but I did see this movie called Warm Bodies. Did you see that one? It was kind of a comedy where a zombie kind of learns to, his heart is beating again. They kind of change his perception and turns back into a living human being. Did you see that movie? I don't know.
Sounds kind of softcore porn.
No, it's not that. It's a movie. It's like a girl, a zombie for some reason. It's a young man, and for some reason he doesn't attack the girl, but then he kind of rescues her from the other zombies, and then he kind of learns to be human again. And I think it's a really interesting movie because
it sounds like every sitcom on TV.
Yeah, but it's different. You know, like those zombies in The Walking Dead, they can't come back. I mean, they're already infected, and they're not. They can't be really human anymore. They're kind of just like shells. They're being animated somehow. But in this one, the guy actually came back, and then he kind of by a change of perception or feeling, he actually perceived himself away from being a zombie into human again. And he slowly evolved into human. He could fall in love and stuff. And then the other zombies, they found ways to do that. And then they were all kind of cured, but they cured themselves by changing their perception. I thought that was interesting.
I like that. Wondering, kind of remediating zombiehood.
But it's kind of like, you know, zombies, you're kind of dead, but you kind of, by perception, you realize you're not really dead at all. And I think that could be a metaphor for something even more profound than that. But I thought it was a good movie. At least it was a creative movie. Most of the zombie ones.
What's it called? Warm Bodies?
Warm Bodies, yeah. It was out a few years ago. It's kind of a love
story. Yeah, remedial zombiehood. No, we're running out of time, John, so let's kind of move on here.
I'll get that.
No, that's all right. I brought it up, so whatever works. This is another question from Red, by the way. Dan Harms argues that the Simon Necronomicon contains magical booby traps that might not trip up an experienced magician or practitioner, but could trip up the newbies. In fact, there used to be an online support group of people who claimed to be victims of this version of the Necronomicon, a fictional book by the Mad Arab, I think.
Yeah, Abdul has read the Mad Arab, right?
Exactly. Would you be willing to spend a few minutes discussing your thoughts on and views on this? I think that's a good question.
Yeah, it's a good question. I got to tell you something. You know, okay, I've read about that for years, the traps and everything. You know, I've never had anybody say specifically what those traps are, actually point to. Now, I've used some of the rituals in there. Like when I did some of my rituals, I did evocation of Yog-Sothoth, and I had one of my magician friends would be in charge of the main circle, and he would always do that watcher ritual. They've got a ritual in there called the evocation of the watcher, and the watcher is like some kind of entity that you conjure up to kind of protect the area from any kind of untoward experiences. Because when you start working with Lovecraftian entities, odd things happen around the perimeters of the circle. And it was his job to make sure it was all impregnable. So he would use the watcher ceremony. And I've used a couple of the other things in there, but I've never found any traps at all. Now, I'm a pretty experienced magical practitioner, but I'm pretty sure that the traps are because of the inexperience of the person doing it, not so much in the rituals themselves. I mean, if you have to actually be very highly disciplined, you have to be very strong-willed, you have to have a good modicum of intelligence, a good sense of humor, and you need to have magical ability. You need to
I would think that you would need some form of rationale, you know, like a goal. And this leads me to Red's third question. Considering that most of Lovecraft's fiction dealt with the encroachment of vast, unknowable horrors into a reality inhabited by mankind, is there any other functional purpose for working with such a system? Why would you even do a Lovecraft ritual?
Well, if you're at a lower level of mental development, you do it to actually cause an apocalypse. There's actually a couple groups around there. One group, I forget what they call themselves, but it's led by somebody, calls him Virgus Satanus. And he actually does the rituals to actually bring about the apocalypse. He wants to wipe out humanity the way Wilbur Whately tried to do in the Dunwich Horror and replace this dimension with great old ones. That's not a very good purpose. Usually what happens when you do that is you end up messing up your own mind, and the rest of the world goes blissfully on. But Red, his name's Red, he actually brings up a very good question. Why would you want to do that? And the only answer that I can give Red for that is it's certainly not for spiritual perfection. Okay, now you got Donald Tyson out there with you've got Donald Tyson out there with the Grimoire, the Necronomicon. He argues that we're trying to spiritually perfect ourselves and that we have to mentor with the old ones. And that runs counter to everything in Lovecraft. These things don't even consider humans anything more than we would consider an ant.
That's been a termite to a commune with the Dalai Lama.
Yeah, well, that'd be like a termite trying to communicate with me so that he can become human. We're going to step on it or eradicate. We're not going to we don't care about the termite. And the old ones view us in that way, too, if we want to see them viewing us that way. But there's only one reason for doing this. And I talk about that in my book. The goal of magic is basically knowledge or power. And when I say knowledge or power, it's just simply knowledge. It's just simply knowledge. A person goes to college, they get an undergraduate degree in philosophy or psychology, they gain a lot of knowledge, and then they can apply that knowledge in certain ways, right? Well, that's what we're doing here. We're gaining knowledge of things that are behind the veil that we haven't been able to see. So it's just pure knowledge and sometimes power. Sometimes you want to make a little tweaking going on to make your life more comfortable or to a little spell or something. So that's for power, too. But I'm not talking about bad knowledge to dominate or bad power to dominate. I'm talking about just pure knowledge and power. That's why we do it. There's no other reason for doing it. It's not certainly for self-development. Some people argue that if a person gets more and more experiences dealing with alternate dimensions and different perceptions, that when you die, you don't die. You just simply perceive things differently, the way those zombies in Warm Bodies are perceiving things differently. Then you go on to a different form of life in a different dimension that's running concurrent with this dimension right now. You know, so maybe you prolong your life into another form of life. I don't know for sure, can't empirically prove it, but I know for a fact the reason why you do magic right now, here and now, is for knowledge and power. So I think that answers Red's question specifically.
I have a question myself I wanted to drop in here. For those who really want to try to get into this, and, you know, we see all the horror films where somebody, child or teenager, is naive, and they look at these magical spells, and they try to do something. And, of course, there's always some bad result. They call up some horrible monster, and they have to spend the rest of the film trying to get rid of the monster and learn and become chastened because they learn that you're not supposed to mess with powers that are beyond your understanding. You have to be careful. You have to be knowledgeable.
Oh, yeah.
Okay, so... And we're going to talk about this in the remaining three segments, plus more listeners' questions. And that is, for our next segment, maybe we'll start with this, the answer to this question. All right, if some of our listeners want to read up on this, they'll read up your book, they maybe do some follow-up research, and they want to cast a few spells. And I'll caution you that I'm not saying people should cast spells necessarily, but maybe just to play with a few things. That's all. Should we tell them, no, no way, wait until you really know what you're doing? Or is there something they could do to just, you know, test the waters without any really nasty blowback? It sounds like the beginnings of a horror film. More to come with John Steadman and Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
Neighbors, I want to tell you about my favorite graphics app. It's the award-winning Graphic Converter. You know, Graphic Converter is the universal genius for photo editing on your Mac. Join over 1.5 million loyal users for this Swiss Army knife photo editing app. It gives you all you expect from a top-flight image editing app with tons of features, and most important, it's easy to use. It's also far less expensive than that other app that you can only get by subscription. You know the one I'm talking about. What's more, you can get 20% off with your order right now. So write this down to learn about Graphic Converter. Go to www.lemkesoft.de/gene. Let me spell that. www.lemkesoft.de/gene.
Attention investors, 2017 is the year of Trump, and financial markets are rising at all-time highs. But economic uncertainty may be greater than after any election in our lifetime. And as retirement approaches, there's little time to recover your losses. You need to hedge against uncertainty. That means transferring part of your retirement to physical gold and silver stored where you can actually hold it in your hand and get it fast in any disaster. It's a perfect time to buy. Prices are low and expected to climb. Make Augusta Precious Metals your personal gold and silver provider. Augusta cares for your financial position and helps you make good decisions. And they're A-plus rated by the Better Business Bureau. Get Augusta's free gold and silver IRA guide. What you learn could help you weather any economic storm. There's no obligation. Just call toll-free. Call 855-222-5857. That's 855-222-5857. Again, 855-222-5857. Trust Augusta. Protect your retirement today.
You may own a knife, but if it's not an indie hammered knife, it's not a knife. From the forge to the grinder to the sheath, each indie hammered knife is handcrafted using God-given talent. The result is the sharpest edge a knife can have and a true work of art. See a variety of knives and the complete knife kit at ihknives.com. Indie hammered knives. Custom knives. Made in America.
It's been said, any society is only 3 missed meals away from chaos. Those times may be near. Think about it. Our country faces multiple terrorist threats and aggressions from Russia and North Korea. Social unrest and violent marches yet again may lead to looting of stores and city shutdowns. And our crumbling infrastructure leaves our power grid vulnerable to long-term outages from a single cyber attack. When the chaos from any one of these threats arises, the government knows it can't provide during a widespread national emergency. That's why you need your own plan for self-reliance. That's where My Patriot Supply comes in. Get a 4-week survival food supply for only $99. That includes breakfast, lunches, and dinners. Order online at preparewithgcn.com. $99 for 4 weeks of survival food that tastes like homemade cooking and lasts up to 25 years from My Patriot Supply. Get your kits today at preparewithgcn.com. Free shipping is included. Preparewithgcn.com.
This is Dan Pilla. Do you owe the IRS money you can't pay? Are tax debts crippling you? I've defended people from the IRS for over 30 years. I've helped thousands, and I can help you too. I wrote the book on IRS settlement, and I'm telling you, there's no such thing as a hopeless case. Call 800-34-NO-TAX to finally get free of IRS debt. With the IRS's new programs, there's never been a better time to solve your problem. Call 800-34-NO-TAX. That's 800-34-NO-TAX or my website, danpilla.com.
We'd like to hear from you. If you have a comment or question about the Paracast, send it to news@theparacast.com. That's news@theparacast.com. And don't forget to visit our famous Paracast community forums at forum.theparacast.com.
Well, you see what we brought on this show with Gene and Chris on the Paracast and John Steadman. So, for people who want to get into this, what should they do to get started, and what are the limits? What should be done there to keep them out of trouble?
Yeah, you know, I got to tell you, you guys are a lot of fun. You guys really have fun doing this. I'm pretty sure your listeners are having fun. I mean, you guys are having fun. And laughter and all sorts of things going on, that's great. This is what I want to suggest for those people. My grimoire is not out yet. I'm still in the process of editing it. And that's for a little bit more advanced students. I think anybody could use those rituals advantageously, even if they're not very well developed. But if somebody wants to start at a basic beginner level and start learning to use these kinds of forces or these kind of elements, I can only recommend one guy. Okay, now I don't know if his books are all in print yet, but you can get them at Llewellyn. His name is Konstantinos. It's a Greek name. I don't know what his real name is. His name is Konstantinos, and he's got a book called The Nocturnicon. He's got a book called The Gothic Grimoire. He's got a book called Gothic Witchcraft. And those books are great for the beginner. They take you into it real slowly. They don't go any farther, and you get a feel of what it's like to deal with these types of forces and these types of entities. I would argue that if you're actually sufficiently educated and skilled, you're not running any risk whatsoever, unless you mix up the planes in some odd way. But I would suggest those books for the beginner. I wouldn't suggest jumping right into the Necronomicon. But I don't.
No. There's way more kind of early walk before you run research that needs to be done. Once you've gone through Konstantinos's one or two books there, another really good tried-and-true classic is Magic in Theory and Practice by Aleister Crowley. It's a little dense. It's a little difficult to read. But in terms of presenting the very basics about magical traditions, why you would even consider doing some sort of real serious ritual. Everything we do in our life, we tie our shoes, we answer the phone. It's all ritual. It's just a matter of how much intent has been encapsulated behind the intent of the ritual. Magic in Theory and Practice is a very good book. Also, Dion Fortune, for people that want to slide into it more, maybe in a fictional realm. She wrote quite a number of novels, and as did Crowley, about neophytes getting involved in serious magical traditions. So, you know, there's more than one way to approach it, but you really, really make sure that your motives are pure and your means are correct.
Yeah, well, those books are all good. Like, Moonchild's a good one. That's Crowley's novel.
Very
Moonchild,
good.
Actually, that does a great portrayal of how to conjure up entities. Got Cyril Gray conjuring that entity in the garden. And then that wonderful ritual that Brother Onofrio, I don't know how his name is pronounced, it does later on, how they're trying to get a spirit to kind of incarnate in the woman. That's a very good book. Magic in Theory and Practice, I remember people used to say the same thing about that book they did about Simon. There's all sorts of pitfalls, but there's some very useful rituals in there, those banishing rituals of the pentagram.
Yeah,
and
the lesser banishing ritual, the LBR, the Rosy Cross.
Yeah.
There's some
yeah,
real
the
basic
system of the Phoenix is really good. The Mass of the Phoenix, you know, eating the body and blood of some kind of god. That's always useful. The Catholics do it every Sunday, you know, so you could use the Mass of the Phoenix. The Star Ruby ritual is real good. So there's a lot of cool stuff. And he's got his own evocation of the Holy Guardian Angel in there, too, you know. So it's got a lot of interesting rituals. I don't think there's any pitfalls or any hidden traps in that like some occults have claimed.
No, I think it's just the writing style. It's the actual, you know, the end of the Victorian age where he was really trying to impress people with his intellectual knowledge and his verbosity. And at the same time, he was actually trying to create something fairly basic and fundamental for people to become, you know, initially exposed to the Golden Dawn system of magic, which is basically what we're talking about here. That's another good book, if you can find it, Israel Regardi's, you know, The Complete Golden Dawn System of Magic, which is a little difficult to find, but boy, I'll tell you, that's... if you have any interest in these subjects.
If you read that one, you'll see Crowley stole all of his rituals from the Golden Dawn. What he did is he streamlined them, but they're all basically in that Golden Dawn book. You know, so he stole it all. He broke his oath. He took an oath when he went to the Golden Dawn that he wasn't going to reveal any of that stuff. First thing he did when he was out of the order, he revealed it all in the Equinox volumes. By the way, I got two sets of those. But back in the old days when it was Samuel Weiser, I bought two sets of the Equinox. I got one clean copy that I never touched. It's just like minted gold, and then the other one, I've got notes and stuff in it. Those books are all good. I think people should experiment with these things. You know, they shouldn't be afraid to do it, but they should try and get themselves as intellectualized as possible, and they should try and deepen their ability to do things like astral traveling and then basic rituals before they start jumping in.
It takes a lot of work in terms of just bringing yourself up to speed, it's an incredibly complex subject. And this is definitely, it would be advisable to really do some research, get yourself up to speed, you know, take baby steps, start small. Don't try to bite off more than you can chew. For obvious reasons, I think, as John, as you mentioned before, it's it's people attempting to bite off more than they can chew and then ending up dealing with something that they really have no business being in a position to have to deal with.
Yeah, but, you know, that's a human thing. Remember back in the 30s, A Bride of Frankenstein, you have, like, Frankenstein's wife saying, "Oh, Henry, we are not meant to deal with these kind of things." You know, that's a standard human reaction. And then in the end, the moral is, well, we better leave these things alone and go to church, you know, because we shouldn't deal with them. And, you know, they're still playing that tired old theme right now.
No, take baby steps. No. I'm not saying, you know, turn your back on the subject matter. I mean, this is very, very controversial belief system to even be talking about on talk radio in this country in this day and age. But I think taking baby steps, becoming informed, finding a system or an approach that seems to kind of resonate with you, that you feel a connection with. Because there's more than a few ways to skin the cat, so to speak.
Even in popular culture, you know, they're right back to the Frankenstein thing, you know, that we shouldn't meddle in these kind of things. And, of course, all the religious people. So you and we're on this show right here, so we're not members of that group. So you're talking to people that aren't members of the group, too. But the majority of people out there, and that's what fuels these movies you're talking about. You got young people, they're messing around with things they shouldn't mess around with, and they get their just results. You know, that thing is still with us, unfortunately. You know, so... I think what we can do is help the people that have already stepped beyond that a little bit. And I think you're right. The baby steps is probably the best way to go.
Yeah. You should mention, of course, in the real world, the fate of the guy who played Henry Frankenstein in The Bride of Frankenstein and Frankenstein.
Yeah.
2 years after The Bride of Frankenstein, Colin Clive died. And he was an alcoholic, and he also suffered from tuberculosis. And the guy must have been in his 30s. I don't think it's because he was a very troubled guy. I mean, he was obviously a brilliant actor, but a really, really troubled guy.
Oh, he was. I've read about his life. You know, he was a terrible alcoholic. He was just on the verge of getting worse when he was in that movie. But he was a very high-strung kind of a person, too. The guy that directed those movies, of course, James Whale, he actually had Colin Clive working a play with him before, you know, so he liked the guy, he liked how high strung he was, you know, but he would use anybody to get the best out of him. But you're right, he died very shortly after that at a very young age.
We've got more to come, guys. We have John Steadman with Gene and Chris. You're in
the Paracast.
For listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNlive.com today.
Lifetime Graze 100% grass-fed beef has the health benefits you seek. When compared to conventional beef, it offers good fats while virtually eliminating the bad. That's the result of cattle who never eat grain, ever. Rich in antioxidants, including vitamin E, C, beta-carotene, and CLA. No artificial hormones, antibiotics, or other drugs. For all our fresh, non-cooked products with only 100% grass-fed beef, go to MidasResources.com. Use voucher code GCN to get 30% off your order. MidasResources.com, or find us on Facebook.
You may own a knife, but if it's not an Indy hammered knife, it's not a knife. From the forge to the grinder to the sheath, each Indy hammered knife is handcrafted using God-given talent. The result is the sharpest edge a knife can have and a true work of art. See a variety of knives and the complete knife kit at ihknives.com. Indy hammered knives. Custom knives made in America.
All right, guys, we're ready for our four-season sunroom, and Daddy's going to get a rec room with refreshments.
Oh, no. We'll be sleeping under the stars.
Mom, what about the one with, you know, the fun?
Nice try, little bro. It's a gym. My gym.
Hey, Grandma's getting her Four Seasons garden room. Weather tight and still like being outdoors.
Maybe a living room. Oh, no, wait. A family hub.
Yeah!
No matter what the budget, the season, or the climate,
Four Seasons Sunrooms let you and your family enjoy the outdoors inside. Call now to hear more about these great offers from the premier manufacturer of sunrooms since 1975.
More reasons for Four Seasons now.
To find out more, call toll-free 800-848-6333. That's 800-848-6333.
Have you checked your Google search results lately? Search results are usually the first impression that people form of you or your business. So make sure that they create a positive impression with ReputationDefender.com. What the internet says about you can have a big impact on your life and your livelihood, even if it's not true. Fortunately, you can now control how you look online and in online search results with ReputationDefender.com. Call 800-831-0771 now. That's 800-831-0771 for your free reputation analysis. If you have negative material from an ex-employee, upset patient, or former client, newspaper article, legal issue, social media, or other source showing up in your search results, you can combat it with ReputationDefender.com. Our dedicated experts in patented technology can help make your online search results look their best. Call 800-831-0771 to learn more. 800-831-0771. That's 800-831-0771. Or visit ReputationDefender.com. Have you racked up more than $10,000 in credit card debt? Are you barely getting by, making minimum payments? You should know, the credit card companies are tricking you into thinking there's no way out. Credit card companies would rather you didn't know that there are ways you can become debt-free and you don't have to pay the entire amount you owe. There are debt relief programs that help people like you escape overwhelming credit card debt. National Debt Relief has helped tens of thousands of people just like you reduce more than $500 million of debt. National Debt Relief has helped so many people, they're A-plus rated by the Better Business Bureau. You don't have to declare bankruptcy or take out a consolidation loan. You have the right to settle your debt for a mere fraction of what you owe. Reduce a large portion of your debt now. Call National Debt Relief at 800-314-7417. 800-314-7417. That's 800-314-7417.
Hey, this is Marie D. Jones, the author of This Book Is From the Future, and you are listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
Remember when they had Baldus and Bela and Bela Lugosi? Yeah. And in those days when Karloff and Lugosi teamed up in movies, it wasn't Boris Karloff. It was just Karloff.
Yeah, he actually eclipsed Bela Lugosi completely. You know, he'd always get first billing, and it was always Karloff. And then right under him in smaller font size, Bela Lugosi.
Lugosi had kind of a tragic history, as we all remember. And that film, was it, you know, Ed Wood shows Bela Lugosi in his final years, where he recovered from his addiction to painkillers because of a back problem, and then he appeared in these nothing films for his final years.
Yeah, but you know what? Something about Lugosi, he was working. You know, I mean, he wasn't making a lot of money, but he was working consistently. He might have been in those poverty roll pictures and stuff, but the man was working, and his name was out there. He was out there. So, you know, a lot of times now, there's a lot of people that actually put him a little bit higher than Karloff. Karloff was certainly a better actor, but some people put Lugosi higher because he had just this manic, demonic whatever persona about
him. Okay, name the one movie or series of movies actually that Lugosi played a romantic lead and the hero. He only did one.
Okay, well, let's see. That was
See what's happening here. We're doing trivia, folks. Did Bela Lugosi ever play a hero?
I'm thinking of my favorite one, which would be The Black Cat, of course, but I'm trying to think if he was ever fully the hero.
Well, The Black Cat, he was kind of a hero, yes.
He was,
and Karloff was really the villain.
Yeah, and in the one, they gave him primacy in that other movie, too, the Paul one, The Raven. They gave him primacy in that one over.
Also, The Invisible Ray. Well, remember that, where they developed this device?
Oh, The Invisible Ray, yeah.
And Karloff, once again, was the bad guy.
Right.
And I believe Lugosi was the kindly one there. I mean, you could see this. He was a pretty good actor because he could play the role of kind of a father figure, and he'd be very kind and very gentle, and then he'd be a monster.
He played Igor, too, or Igor. I say Igor because I'm thinking
Igor,
of
yes, Igor.
In
Walk
Young
this way.
But he played Igor very well in The Son of Frankenstein, you know, so he was a pretty good actor.
He was reduced, though, by the time they had, what was it, the first Frankenstein and the Wolfman, where the Frankenstein monster was played by Lugosi. He was reduced to that, where he would be a voiceless monster.
Yeah, and it was a shame, too, because they gave him the script to that movie, and they told him the Frankenstein monster was blind, and so he played it like it was a blind monster, and then they kept that conveniently quiet, and then when the movie was released, they said, look at Lugosi, he's overacting, he's a terrible actor, and he was actually trying to act like the monster was blind, that he couldn't see what he was doing.
You're kidding.
That's true, yes, I remember that.
Oh, man.
They set him up for that. You know, they set him up for that. And then later on, they had John Carradine, who actually looks like Bram Stoker's version of Dracula a little bit more. Right. They had him play the Dracula. But Carradine, the rest of these actors, they just didn't have that manic intensity that Lugosi had. And Lugosi got a chance again with Abbott Costello meet Frankenstein to play Dracula again. But he had
that's
it.
Classic.
And the monster was played in those final films, Abbott and Costello Meet Frankenstein, House of Dracula, House of Frankenstein, by an actor named Glenn Strange.
Yeah.
And those of you who remember TV trivia, on Gunsmoke, he played the bartender.
Oh, really? I didn't know that.
Glenn Strange.
Oh, man. You frightened me, Gene.
This is
you
trivia, but
frightened me.
Yeah.
All right. We're running out of time here. We need to go to one of our favorite questioners, Marduk, who's been quelling chaos on the planet since 2352 B.C. We haven't seen him out of the woodwork here very much lately, but you brought him out, John. And he is curious if you have read any of the thousands of letters Lovecraft wrote to other authors as they intentionally co-created the so-called mythos as fiction.
Yeah, you know, something, you know, I'm a scholar of Lovecraft. And I write not only the books, I've got my second book out now. I don't know when they're going to announce that, but I've written various articles, too, about Lovecraft. You have to actually have read every single one of those letters in order to be an appropriate scholar. I've read every single letter. It's five volumes, Arkham House. I've read every one of them. You know,
Marduk is saying is you can actually chart the progression of the Necronomicon as a MacGuffin, for example, where they actually discuss and joke about people believing in their fiction. In this way, he's wondering, let's talk about that first, and then he's wondering about, you know, what's the point, basically.
But Necronomicon is a fictional document. Lovecraft kind of stumbles on by accident. You know, when he was a young kid, he pretended like he was an Arab prince or something like that. He read The Arabian Nights, and he came up with the idea of Abdu al-Hazrath. Abdu al-Hazrath is not phonetically a real name. You know, he just came up with a name. And then he kind of came along with the Book of Spells, and then it was the Necronomicon. And then he created this kind of pseudo-history of the Necronomicon when it was first compiled, and then different translations of it over the years. But it's a fictional book, and none of them took it seriously. They didn't take the mythos seriously. You know, they all knew it was a fictional book, and Lovecraft liked it if they worked it into their stories. He liked it if they worked in some of his entities, and he would work in their entities, too. But it was just a big game. It was a joke. They would trade stories with each other, and sometimes he'd do revision works, and he'd put some of his things in. So it was just all fun. It was all just fun and games to them. They weren't trying to actually create anything serious here. In fact, Lovecraft called his work, he didn't call it the Cthulhu Mythos, by the way, he called it Yog-Sothery. He said, I wonder if anybody will ever take my Yog-Sothery serious. He thought it was funny. You know, the whole thing was humor.
Right. It was kind of like a nerdy joke, really, amongst himself and his real cutting-edge contemporaries at the time.
Yeah, and Derleth and
he wasn't
Robert quite, Howard. All those crazy guys, Derleth, Robert Howard, Clark Ashton Smith, Robert Block was involved in it for a time. It was just a fun game. You know, sometimes they'd visit each other in person, but most of the time it was just all handled with correspondence. And they were having a great old time. That's how Lovecraft was comfortable. He was more comfortable writing letters and dealing with people that way than he was actually face-to-face. That was his preferred method of communication.
So he didn't go out there and do book signings?
No, he didn't do any book signings. And he thought, when he died, he thought it was a complete failure. Okay, he thought it was a complete failure. A lot of his best things had been rejected by Weird Tales. That was his only market. He couldn't get a hardcover book in print. He got a couple stories that appeared in anthology, but he thought he was a complete failure when he died.
He was 47 when he died.
Yeah.
Yeah, but he had gone downhill for actually quite a bit of time before that. When he turned 40, then things really started to go downhill for him, psychologically.
He wasn't taking care of himself physically. Yeah. You know, he was relying on canned food and stuff and secondary food. He'd never made a lot of money, so he would actually pride himself on not spending too much on food. And that kind of contributed to his bad health, too, and stuff. But he thought it was a complete failure. If he could come alive today, he'd be amazed at the stature that he'd achieved. And also, he'd be a little bit richer. Which would be nice for him, I think.
Isn't that strange how many dead people are out there who were authors or painters or in film and music, and after they die, they are discovered. And people make millions of dollars.
Sold one painting to his brother.
Excuse me?
I know, but you know, what about Van Gogh?
Yeah, Van Gogh. He only sold one painting during his lifetime, and that was to his brother. Who did it basically just so, you know, to kind of, because he felt sorry for the guy, you know?
At least he sold one. You know, at least he sold one. Like Edgar Allan Poe, he died in pretty horrendous circumstance, too, but at least he got a little bit of fame. He had a couple books out in The Raven, actually got him some fame and a gold bug, you know, so a lot of them had that, but Lovecraft didn't even have that. You know, one of his friends was trying to put together The Shadow over Innsmouth in book form, and it just never came together. And, you know, Lovecraft.
Well, he lived with his mother, didn't he, or his sister or somebody?
Well, his mother died when he was a little bit younger, and what he did was he moved in with his aunts. And they lost
aunts, that's right. Yeah, I mean, the guy was really on his own.
Hey, guys, we got to do our break here. Let's do our break and talk more about this with John Steadman, Gene Steinberg, Chris O'Brien, who has become a strange creature of the night. You're in
the Bear Den.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Be sure to visit GCNLive.com today.
We also have swag. You know, we have all these exclusive Paracast things that you can buy. We've got, like, I guess 60 or so different items. And entails T-shirts, sleeves for notebook computers, iPad cases, mouse pads, the Paracast jumbo tote bag, all sorts of T-shirts and jackets and stuff like that for men and women. We have a Paracast aluminum water bottle. All this stuff, you go to store.theparacast.com, store.theparacast.com. What makes it special is that the items are the best quality, you know, great T-shirts, fabrics, and they have our official logo on them. That's what makes them special, in multiple sizes and colors. We even have stuff for children, stuff for women, stuff for men. We have all sorts of sizes, like small up to X large. A lot of good stuff. That's the swag from the Paracast. You go to store.theparacast.com, stop by, and take a shopping tour.
Are you looking to become more self-sufficient? Then you need to have your own energy source. The Solark EMP hardened generator is automatic, maintenance-free, and reduces your monthly electric bill. You can also take it off-grid when you go camping. Contact PortableSolarLLC.com or call for details at 972-575-8875 today. Portable Solar LLC gives you everything you need to start using solar energy in less than 1 hour. Solark EMP hardened solar generator energy insurance. For your family or business, call Portable Solar LLC today.
It's called the Deep State. Barack Obama's most loyal aides still hold office, and they want to stop President Trump. Deep State was first revealed in the runaway New York Times bestseller, Big Agenda. David Horowitz's Big Agenda exposes Obama's government in exile and his shocking plan. Newsmax, Lou Dobbs, Ann Coulter all say you must read Big Agenda at bookstores everywhere, or check out our free offer. Call 800-NEWSMAX, 800-NEWSMAX, or go to BigAgenda411.com. That's BigAgenda411.com.
The answer to being in control of your own healthcare is freedom from insurance.
Become part of a group of self-pay patients that come together to share in each other's medical expenses. Individual share amounts begin at $107 a month and $347 for families. Choose from three health sharing programs. Holistic treatments may be eligible for sharing. See guidelines. Discount programs available for dental, vision, and pharmacy. Go to libertyoncall.org. That's libertyoncall.org.
Hi, my name is John Kunkel. I'm 63 years of age. I watched several YouTube videos of Stephen Ewers and learned what supplements might help me with energy and weight loss. I've now been on the Andreas Black Cumin Seed Oil, Synergy One, and 600 products from Synergistic Nutrition for several weeks now. I've lost 10 pounds. My joint pain has been reduced significantly. I have a lot of energy that I've never had before. My cravings for sweets are gone, and I'm rarely hungry. Even my cravings for foods like hamburgers and heavy carbohydrate meals are now gone. This is the only thing that's worked for me. I was seriously considering bariatric surgery, but that's out the window now. Thank you so much, Synergistic Nutrition.
With Synergistic Nutrition, we help you take the guesswork out of supplementation and help you hit the bullseye of success. I encourage you to get specific about your health needs, because when you do, your body will celebrate with energy and well-being. Call Synergistic Nutrition today at 888-988-3325 or visit oneworldway.com. That's oneworld, W-H-E-Y.com.
By now you know that wireless technology like cell phones do in fact pose dangers to the health and privacy of everyone. Blockit Pocket's wide range of products are unmatched in providing the protection you deserve. No scare tactics, just common sense. BlockitPocket.com offers quality American-made options to alleviate and eliminate these invisible dangers. Learn more at BlockitPocket.com or call 888-315-9618. BlockitPocket.com, enhancing health and privacy.
Hi, it's Grant Cameron from PresidentialUFO.com. You're listening to the Paracast, the gold standard of paranormal radio.
That's Chris. I think he's not vomiting, folks. Don't take that away.
No, that was my Cthulhu.
That's it, right. I wanted to ask you before we get back to John Steadman to wrap things up. You've been a busy bee with OurStrangePlanet.com. And I'm looking at that, and, you know, one day you hadn't touched in a year or so. The next day, there's a volume of new material on there.
I kind of forgot how to do WordPress, and then I forgot my administrative keys to get in and stuff. So I resolved to get the site up and in functioning again. There's a bunch of new stuff on there. So, yeah, go to OurStrangePlanet.com. I also have finally come up with an e-version of my very first book, The Mysterious Valley. There's a nice e-version that has some bonus material, a really good 3D map of all our event activity in the greater San Luis Valley. There's the entire database, report after report after report, for the time period up to the publishing of the book in 96. So there's a bunch of good stuff in there. And if you go to Outer Strange Planet, you can pick one up there. I can go ahead and shoot it off to you, or you can go to Amazon, The Mysterious Valley e-version.
This is OurStrangePlanet.com. So once again, that's OurStrangePlanet.com. OurStrangePlanet.com, all the new stuff from Chris O'Brien. So check it out. Great stuff. John, you check it out too. I'm going to give you I'm going to give you homework.
I sure will.
I'm going to give you homework right now. You're a teacher and you know about giving people homework. So I will give you homework right now. Check out OurStrangePlanet.com. Chris, do we have any more questions before we wrap up for today?
It's not really more a question. It's kind of a joke from Marduk again. He says, oh, another thought. If the Philip experiment, which you're going to have to remind everybody what that is when I'm done with the question here, if the Philip experiment is replicable and demonstrated the creation of a paranormal creature, perhaps this is a way of creating a real-life manifestation of the dreaded Cthulhu. I'm a giant Lovecraft fan, and as cool as that sounds, I think that would be a bad idea.
You want my comment? I don't think it's bad. Let's see what happens. You should do that. Do I have a minute to plug some stuff? Just plug a couple things?
Let me just turn on the electricity so you can plug yourself in and get zapped. Okay, you got 2 minutes to plug. Go ahead.
Okay, people should go to my website, johnlstedman.com. They'll tell about all my events, but I got a couple events coming up. Just the Carnival of Power Horror in Buffalo, New York, August 26th to 27th. I'm going to do a presentation there and then do a book sign. And then a Scarefest convention, Lexington, Kentucky, September 30th to October 1st. And I'm going to do a presentation and book sign there, too. People can always reach me on Facebook, by the way. So some of these people, like Red and some of the other people, if they want to contact me on Facebook, have them hook up with me, and I'll friend them or do whatever it takes to get them in there. And then if they want to talk at length on any of the things that we talked about, I'll be glad to do that. You know, so I love talking about this stuff.
We're not even going to charge you for this, okay?
Well, I would say, too, to John, to come to our forum, and there's going to be a thread about the show, which will go off into the dozens and dozens of responses, I'm sure. And so it'd be great to have you involved in that discussion as well.
Okay, when does that happen?
The show goes live on the morning of Sunday, March 26th. And it's heard on the 32 stations carried by the GCN network. After that, it goes up on iTunes and spread around the world, is available from our site. At that point, we post a thread in our forums at forum.theparacast.com, and that's where listeners can comment about the show. They can ask questions. And you'll see, if you look at the forum, quite often authors drop in there. In fact, for those of you who are wondering, we've got a really great thread right now featuring arch UFO skeptic Jim Oberg. And he's been extremely, extremely active in our forums, neighbors, so you want to check that out. So, yeah, John, you want to do that.
I'm writing this down now. The forum will start, like, after the 26th, right?
Right. Well, I send you the link to the show, and I'll email it to you. At that point, you can go to the forum, and there'll be a place there where you can see people talk about it.
Okay, give me all the instructions about when you email me, okay, so that I can get to it. And I'll be glad to take part in that. I'd like to continue my discussion on some of these issues, and I'd like to talk more at length than some of these people. They really want some information here, and I would be very happy to help them out with that.
Let me ask you, because we only have a couple of minutes left before we wrap things up. Today, people looking at all this, we're talking about a writer who lived and died decades ago. What can people starting out today, what should they know, what can they learn about H.P. Lovecraft to come to appreciate his work?
Well, I always tell people, go right to the primary sources, like a scholar would, you know. Pick up a copy of Lovecraft's works. Probably one of the best one would be the Library of America hardcover edition, Lovecraft Tales. That's a good place to start out. I wouldn't just start out with Cthulhu Mythos fiction because it's very uneven. I mean, they have a lot of it. S.T. Joshi keeps, it seems like every month he's publishing a new anthology or something, so a lot of people write this stuff. But I say go to the source. I've read a lot of the Cthulhu Mythos fiction, and it doesn't even come close to what Lovecraft himself could do, you know. So they should read the actual source documents. And then if they want to get into occult practices, they should kind of pick up a copy of my book. You know, give them a good overview of the kind of magical systems that are in operation today that actually do deal with Lovecraft's fictional constructs and his mythologies. And then those Constantinos books. And if you read all that stuff in magic and theory and practice, if you read all that stuff, then you'll kind of find your way. That's good. All good source document.
Waiting for you, Chris.
Oh, you are? I was waiting for you. Well, that sounds good, John. And you know, thank you so much for kind of cracking the egg on this particular topic here at the Paracast. We don't do shows like this very often, and it's always fun to have someone that's as well-researched and well-read as you to talk about.
Well, I appreciate you guys putting up with me, putting up with all my Skype issues, too, and stuff. But I think it'll be a really good show, and I'm going to drop into that forum. But I really got to thank you guys, you know, for having me be a guest on this show. It's been quite a lot of fun. You guys really know how to have fun. I've done a lot of these kind of radio or podcast things, and you guys have got to be among the top of people just having just a good time. That's
well, thank you. We appreciate that. We try to.
It's the truth.
It's entertainment, but we're deadly serious about the quality of education that we're hoping that our listenership is getting. We pride ourselves on our motto of separating signal from noise.
Okay.
We try to do things differently than a lot of people here. That's why the show obviously gets a different kind of reaction. So, for example, we will often bring on a guest, and if they're obviously playing games with us, and we think they don't know what they're talking about, or they give explanations of what they do that comes across as gibberish or word salad, if we find that, we will
Oh, yeah.
Call them out on their word salad.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Extraordinary claims require at least a little bit of evidence.
And some common sense. We can dig that, too. Okay, once again, for people who want to know more about what you do, John Steadman, your last time at the bat on this episode, where do they check you out?
Well, they check me out at my website, www.johnlsteadman.com. They can check me out on Facebook and Twitter. I have a blog, too, you know, so they can check out the blogs. I usually put all my events in the blogs. But I like the Facebook thing because I'm not just promoting myself on the blog, but I'll put links to different things like publications that I do. I do a lot of little publications in addition to the book and things that I create, you know. And sometimes I just have postings. I'll find a weird picture and I'll comment on it. It's usually got some words of wisdom or insight in it. So I have a lot of fun on Facebook. So if people want to get me on Facebook, you know, that's probably a smart way to do it. And you'll have links to everything that I do on there. So I guess those are the easiest ways.
You can find us on Twitter, by the way. Look for the Paracast on Twitter. Look for two Paracast fan clubs, a community, and a group, I figured it out, on Facebook.
You're the gold standard of paranormal shows, right? Is that what you call yourself, the gold standard? I love that.
One of our listeners called us that, and we just picked up on it. You can also find Chris's work at OurStrangePlanet.com. You can also order his books from there. You can find us also if you check out plus.theparacast.com, where we offer you the Paracast Plus. And the Paracast Plus is a subscription service that consists of the After the Paracast podcast, a commercial-free version of this show, classic episodes coming, content from Paul Campbell, and more. That's the Paracast Plus, starting at $1.49 a week. Learn more at plus.theparacast.com. John Steadman, thanks for joining us on the Paracast.
And gentlemen, thank you. It's been really a pleasure.
The Paracast, featuring Gene Steinberg and Christopher O'Brien, is a copyrighted presentation of Making the Impossible, Incorporated. Tune in next week for a new adventure in The Paracast.
Thank you for listening to GCN. Visit GCNLive.com today.
Attack of the Rockoids has been well received by critics and readers alike. It's a thrill-a-minute story you'll never forget. A former U.S. military intelligence officer is haunted by intense dreams about a beautiful woman pleading for his help after a terrible battle in outer space. But the dreams turn out to be true and thrust him into a telepathic love affair with a woman whose faraway planet is intent on destroying the Earth. And now the gripping tale continues in The Coming of the Protectors. It's the second book of the Rockoids trilogy, a galaxy-spanning adventure that pits our hapless heroes against powerful, fanatical enemies that threaten the lives of freedom-loving beings everywhere. Attack of the Rockoids and The Coming of the Protectors, classic science fiction at its best, available now. For more details, visit Rockoids.com. That's Rockoids.com.
A lot can happen in 6 seconds. A rodeo ride, a dramatic basketball win, and the world record holder can solve a Rubik's Cube. 6 seconds is how long it takes for an 18-wheeler traveling at a safe speed to come to a complete stop. And in those 6 seconds, that truck will travel the length of 2 football fields. So please, give them room. Never cut in front of a large truck for any reason. Our roads, our responsibility. Learn more at sharetheroadsafely.gov.
Many medicines used to treat colds and flu contain acetaminophen, a pain reliever and fever reducer found in hundreds of over-the-counter and prescription medicines. But taking too much or more than one medication containing acetaminophen per day can damage your liver. So always read the label and don't take acetaminophen if you drink 3 or more alcoholic drinks every day. To learn more, visit fda.gov/OTC pain info. A message from the U.S. Department of Health and Human Services Food and Drug Administration.